Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listick Behind the Curtain. As always, my chance to step away from the world of politics and law that you watch me cover on television all day to the world of theater and entertainment here on the WGN Radio podcast, which candidly can be more fun than talking about the world of politics. Well, we're going to have a great break today because joining me is a guy. Not only I'm so thrilled he's coming to Chicago to perform, but I've loved this guy ever since I first saw him on television, and you probably did too. Jay Rodriguez, who was one of the original Fab Five of the original Queer Eye for the Straight Guy show. I mean, it's still around and they're still dating, but I'm sorry, Jay, it's never been better than it was when you and Carson Kressley and those guys were on it. Am I just biased?
I think we may be a little biased, but I will say, you know, it's different when you're starting something out. I think we were pitched this idea of the show, a make better show, and instinctually the five of us saw it as a comedy. And we had, you know, they brought in comedy directors from Hollywood to direct us. So when the emotions organically started coming out from the straight guys we were making over or the people we were making over, that kind of took us by surprise. So we didn't have a set agenda. And I'd imagine if you were to ever see the original show and then try to recreate it, there's already like a template in place of like, you know, what the show should feel like maybe that we didn't really know when we were going into it. However, I will say this, the new cast just took, you know, the template we had and added to it beautifully. And I think that's why it's had such global success with this new iteration.
Well, let me give you another thought. You guys started, I think, in 2003. So yes. Hate to say it, but
so we'll be 21 this summer.
20 plus years ago, we also lived in a pretty different world. So sure. I'm curious, the straight guys that you would work with back then, and of course, each of you had your own area. You were the culture kind of guy. Was everybody open to it? Did you face any prejudice back then? Was everybody involved?
So I think, you know, if we look at the landscape, we had maybe a network television representation like Will and Grace. We had Ellen had her talk show, which was new that year. We had on cable Queer as Folk and L Word. But in terms of mainstream, not a whole lot of visibility, and certainly not a group of all gay people relating to straight folks. And so, yes, the comedy was reversing the locker room razzing or bullying that, you know, one would maybe think a straight guy would give to the gay guys, but sort of switching the power dynamic. And now the gay men are here doing it in a funny way. However, you're right. When we went into these homes, not every single guy was warm and inviting and like, yeah, I'm cool with you. But by the end, if you just consistently show up like yourself unapologetically, all the guys, hands down, were just, I think, sort of broken open beautifully. They never had to look at emotions or why they were in certain habits. And oddly, some of the things that we taught them how to do were things that their wives or girlfriends had been, you know, nagging them about for years. And so you're right. I mean, that time it was not as accepting. And for context, if you went to a major drugstore, there was like a little sliver of men's skincare, grooming, any kind of products like that. Now it's like so many more options. I think the takeaway is we gave men permission to take better care of themselves in all areas. And now it's somewhat of a given. You know, it was the beginning of what I guess the New York Times did labeled the metrosexual movement. Now that's not even a thing anymore. You know, just guys to take better care of themselves.
Well, that's, I mean, today with the show even on, I mean, it's not the novelty that it was back then. I think culture has changed, but with you guys as well. So you and Carsley and Kyan, I mean, all the guys, you all became sort of stars in your own right back then as well. When you went in, did you sort of say, okay, I'm taking a big step in my career, you know, and we'll see which way it goes. It could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. Or was it all, hey, here I am. I am who I am, and let the chips fall where they fall.
It's a really smart question because you're right. At that time, for context, Sean Hayes, who played Jack on Will and Grace, was not publicly out of the closet.
Maybe, oh, that's right.
You know, so the big fixtures in the world, Ricky Martin wasn't out yet. So we were, I think all of us kind of a little anxious about being out like that. Me being the only actor, I knew that it would limit opportunities because I knew how I knew how people in casting and producers kind of were thinking in that time. And I wasn't so aware. But here's what happened. We all thought no one would see it. It was on a small cable network called Bravo that didn't have massive shows yet beyond Inside the Actor's Studio.
It didn't have Andy Cohn yet, I don't think.
Well, I think he was like in a position of a producing position. He was like one of the executive producers one of the people, the executives at Bravo. So there wasn't this forward facing group of queer people on television we could look at as a model. So I think all of us were like, well, we'll just do it, get a little extra coin, but like no one will ever see it. Yeah. And I even remember my final, like our wrap party being like, it was nice meeting you. Like, really, we did the first, I think, 10 or 12 episodes, and I don't think any of us assumed that 2 weeks later we would get the news that it had tripled Bravo's ratings ever and that we were going to shoot the cover of Entertainment Weekly in 2 days. Like, all that stuff, Vanity Fair, Ellen, Oprah, all that happened in one meeting 2 weeks after the show started airing. They called us in and dropped that bomb, and that is where the understanding of, oh, I think this is, like, going to be a big deal.
You know? And
we weren't paid like major, like we were on a major show or that we were big stars. So the process is really humbling. You're in, you know, like dirty homes. There was no like fancy trailers or anything like that in making this kind of a show. So I don't know. The work didn't necessarily align with what I think any of us thought of as what would happen if you made it, you know? So I think it was good in keeping us humble.
Yeah. Of course, the tricky part, well, Sean Hayes is a friend. And I mean, so the bottom line is for today, you know, when people are like, I didn't know he was gay, or I didn't know, you know, Truman Capote was gay. What? He just hadn't found
it. I think there's a lot of people in Hollywood who like everybody knew. It was just, in that time, it was not recommended by people who were managing careers and stuff to come out. And I think we kind of softened the blow for some folks. But I also believe that coming out is like a personal thing and not everyone has to if they don't want to, you know?
Right. Without question. So out of curiosity, what kind of prep, and we're going to talk about, you're coming here to Chicago March 15th through 17th. I promise not to talk about Greta the whole time. There's a couple things that's been on my mind. But the preparation. So did you learn about who this guy was ahead of time and interview him, whatever? How'd you do your homework?
So the producers will go in and assess the situation and create a dossier for us. But then you have to remember that is one human's perception, or maybe two producers' perception of the guy. We have generally about two or three meetings about him before we ever meet him as a cast. And in the room, we're able to ask questions about the dossier that they've built, which is their perception of his deficits in our arena. And then we float around ideas about what the reveal should be, like what is going to be the biggest payoff. The other thing too is, you're making a TV show, so you need to think of it as what is also going to be entertaining for the viewer, what's challenging enough, but something that'll set him up for success. So there was a lot to consider, which is why I think that show is different, because you really are, we were not credited as such, but you really are producing the show in tandem with the producers. And I think shows like We're Here got it right when they made their cast executive producers as well as being the hosts of that show, because it is also a makeover show in the similar Queer Eye fashion. And that is better because you do walk away with that skill set. So we had about two or three meetings like that. Tom, the interior designer, would actually go to the house with the guy not there because he needed to, a picture was not going to do it for him. The rest of us just kind of all met him on the fly, you know, after having these meetings about him. And maybe then you have a presenting issue that a producer told you about, but that's a facade to something much greater that you discover in person and the whole makeover shifts.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you ever have a moment where you did your planning, you're ready to present somebody with your suggestions, you meet the guy and you're like, oh, this is not going to work?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, sometimes it would be tricky because you have to secure places to film. Let's say it's like for Carson to be like a clothing store, or for me, if I was a segment and we're out and about, we've now, you know, that business is going to shut down to let us film for these hours there. So there's a lot of like mechanics behind the scenes, but I'm pretty sure things like that have happened, or even cast members get sick. And so you have to like swap things around. And, Yeah, all of that was, yeah, it was a little bit like the Wild. It was Renegade style. You know, sometimes we had permits to shoot in places and other times we didn't.
At times we didn't.
Yeah, so you're just like, let's get the shot and go, you know.
Did you audition to be the culture guy, or it was sort of like, I just want to be on the show, you tell me what you want me to do? Yeah.
So this is fascinating. Back then, they had shot a pilot with only Carson and Ted and three other guys who did not move forward. After that pilot got shopped around for what I think was maybe close to 2 years, that Bravo got interested, and then they recast the other three guys. Now this cast of five guys, not including me, I'm not there yet.
Oh,
shoot, two episodes. Something about the, as relayed to me, something about the chemistry was not right. So they knew they wanted to recast the culture guy. Now, mind you, they've already shot two episodes. So as it's presented to me, an agent calls me from my agency that I've never spoken to. I didn't even know that there was a hosting division. He said, hey, my name's Mark Turner. I'm a hosting agent at Abrams, and I have an audition for you. And I was like, what is it? He's like, well, we don't know. He's like, you know, he basically said, it is a, I don't think we have the term reality show. Maybe we did. Unscripted. I don't know what the language was back then, but it was basically letting me know that it's not a scripted thing. They want to ask you, it's a makeover thing. So think Trading Spaces, but it's five guys. You all have to be out of the closet. So kind of like The View, or like crime fighting, Charlie's Angels level comedy. And I mean, the adjectives given were not painting a good picture, but I was in an off Broadway show at the time. And anyone who knows, when you leave a Broadway show making a nice salary and you go off Broadway to be on the soundtrack, to be reviewed as an actor, you do that because it's an investment in your career, not in your pocketbook. So for me, I was like, great. It's not paying, it's like, you know, not paying that much money, but it'll supplement my income until I go back into rent. And so I went in and I just met with a woman in an office who asked me to take her on a verbal date as a divorced dad living on Long Island. What would we do? What would our city romantic date be? And being that I was, you know, a man above town, and I knew a lot about New York City, and I kind of wowed her with my answer. And she said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 23. And she said, you're 27. And I was like, okay. And she said, where'd you
go to school? You're an actor. You can be 27.
Right. And she was like, although I looked like 14 at the time, but she was like, where'd you go to college? And I was like, well, I was going to, but then I got rent. She's like, you graduated. Give NBC and Bravo the same answers tomorrow. You're getting a callback. So I knew what a callback was, but I was like, really? So I don't even know. I was in an off-Broadway show where they had dyed my hair platinum white. So I had to go to this network with platinum white hair, dressed fashionably, I thought, you know. Now knowing the show, I probably was not dressed well for the audition. And at the audition was a long boardroom set up with Bravo seated on one side, NBC seated on the other side, and the creator and director of the show, Andy Cohen, was in the room. And there were three chairs with one empty seat between, you know, the three chairs that faced the board. So I sat there. No one said what this was. They just said callback. So the board would ask me a question. I assume the guys, a brightly dressed blonde guy and sort of a gay Buddy Holly, were there also auditioning for this culture guy. And basically the board would ask me simple questions. Where are you from? What's your background? And they kept trying to discredit me or kind of read me or whatever you want to say, throw me off course. Halfway through, I realized there's no way I'm going to get this. What I'm going to do is be funny and memorable. And this way NBC remembers me and perhaps puts me in a sitcom. That's what I was thinking. That was my logic. So I was quick-witted and I was sharp-tongued and I was just really, really fast and made everyone chuckle. And then I left, defeated. I go to work, I'm at the dressing table putting on my makeup for the show. And I call this agent guy and I was like, listen, don't ever submit me for anything like that ever again. I made a fool of myself. I'm so humiliated. I was so wrong for it. An hour later, he calls back and he goes, well, I guess you didn't do that bad. You start Monday. And it was a chemistry test to see if I could hold my own comedically with Carson and Ted.
So they were in on it.
They were in on it. They were not auditioning. They were there to see if they liked any of these potential talents that were coming in. And that's how I got Queer Eye, which is not in alignment with any of the things that I would ultimately be doing on the show. But thank God I had a level of professionalism given to me via my Broadway background, discipline, my work ethic, being in a multicultural city like New York, the experiences I had being in that city were new information to a lot of these straight guys who needed just some remedial help.
Okay, yeah. Here's the catty question, because, you know, all these gay guys and the whatever. Was there competition in doing that? Or did everybody say, no, we're all going to get along, we're fine, may we all be successful here?
I think not between us personally, but there was moments, and I've talked about this candidly before, there was moments where certain directors, certain producers who were in another room in the house, or perhaps they were in Video Village outside the house, they can watch what the two handheld cameramen are shooting. There's also stationary cameras in the kitchen and the bathroom, but only two camera people following five guys. And sometimes the camera people would only follow Carson. Wow. And so at that point, we were just like, sit on the couch, and they're like, what are you guys doing? You guys are not doing anything. I was like, when you start following us, because you're directing this, you have your little walkie-talkie thing and you're telling camera one, then we'll do it. But that didn't make us treat Carson differently. It wasn't whatever. It's lazy. It's also like Bravo, every single ad, and maybe just because it worked, but would always say things like, you know, see what Carson does this week. And I was like, you know, there's five people in this show. That was a really missed opportunity, but it spoke to that era of marketing where you establish one star. But interpersonally, it didn't affect us. Like, I don't think we all were so different and really liked what was happening in our lives outside the show that I don't think we were trying to vie for, like, to be, the show is designed where everyone has a moment. So, like, right. No, I think the only time I could think of that was that certain directors would only want to shoot Carson. We were like, well, great. I'm going to sit here and read this Us Weekly.
I totally get that. You know what? I've been in this profession a very long time, and I've had a co-anchor here or a co-host here or something. I totally get that, because look, we have egos in doing these things. And sure, so I might like you who's next to me, but they're not treating me. I totally get that. And thank you for your honesty on that. And here's the journalism 101 question. I just don't even want to ask it, but I know people are going to ask me. So are you still friendly with these guys? Do you talk?
Yeah, we actually tour. We're doing, we do like a stage show. We thought it'd be like Comic-Con, like just five chairs and an audience Q&A. It's not. It was a full production. We did the first one in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania at Wind Creek Casino, which was lovely, by the way. And it was during the holidays. And we did a fully produced show with live makeovers, cameras that follow the audience members backstage, check-ins, huge LED screen, the set that was gorgeous, games. I performed two numbers. It was a show. It was like a fully produced show. And the magic is, like, we don't all always hang out together. I live in LA, they live in New York or Florida, and the magic comes back as if no time had passed. It's right. The most bizarre thing. So yeah, so Carson's kind of taken the lead on doing that, because he was friends with the event producer at this casino. And ever since then, they filmed it in HD and now packaged it. And so hopefully maybe we'll be in Chicago sometime.
Oh, I hope so. And let's talk again when that happens. I said when that happens.
Exactly.
Well, and I love the way you talked about you were involved in this little off-Broadway show, that, of course, we've never heard of, where you played Angel in Rent. So, by the way, that means you sing, and that's why you're coming to Chicago. You
that was... That was Broadway. Off Broadway was a musical called Xana Don't. That's the one that
we met. I was going to hold that.
That's why my hair was that color for a little while. And then I got Queer Eye and I had to dye it brown and still do Xana Don't at night.
So let me talk about Xana Don't for a moment, because I was going to kind of, it's not in like the bio that is out there of you.
Maybe it should be.
Also, yes, I thought maybe there's a thing, but I you were my favorite queer guy. So I always follow it. So I went to see Xana Don't because of you, and we met afterwards and chatted for a while. But the reason that gave me pause is you said you were doing it before Queer Eye, but I think I went to see you during Queer Eye for that. Did I not?
So no. Well, I think we opened in May and closed in July. And that's exactly when I was shooting Queer Eye. And the reason why Xana closed was because I had gotten queer. I couldn't do double duty. I was getting up at like 5:30, get picked up for work at 6, go work from 6 to 7 p.m. on Queer Eye, then race to the theater and do a full 90-minute show that was vocally and physically demanding, and I couldn't do it. So I gave my 2 weeks notice. Xana closes 2 weeks later, or a week and a half later, that's when Queer Eye launches.
Oh, then I guess I met you before Queer Eye, but it was during Xanadu. I loved Xanadu.
But it was overlapping. I mean, it was okay. Right on the yeah.
Yeah. And I have the CD. I mean, I love the music from Xanadu. I love everything about it. So I just wanted to let you know that was actually a favorite. So it wasn't in the bio. And I went, well, maybe he doesn't like to talk about it, but I loved it.
Oh, I love it.
Let's go to Rent. Because, I thought maybe you were the way you said that. I thought, oh, maybe Rent was earlier than I thought. But this is Broadway, which means you were also in that show with some pretty good people who've done okay.
Yeah, I mean, I did the show from 1997 to 2003 and then went back during Queer Eye for 4 weeks because I had left to... Basically, what happened was I was doing Rent. I say I want to do another show for 6 months. Rent says, go do that for 6 months and come back. I said, great. So my plan is open Xanadu, get the reviews, be on the soundtrack, and then go back to Rent. That was always the plan.
Right.
So then I, in the middle of that, get Queer Eye. So I use my television out in my Rent contract to not go back to Rent, which means I didn't get a final show and the cast gives you a cake and they sing Happy Trails and fans get to... So I wanted to go back. But yeah, I did it for... I got cast when I was 18, went to open the first international company in Canada with the original creative team and everything, and then did it on Broadway for 4 years after that year run in Canada.
You know, you said something. It's funny. There was a play here called Party many years ago, and I picked up something from it. So I'm going to run this by you. You just said that you were on the, which you are, you said you're on the soundtrack for Xanadu. And one of the lines in this particular show, which is meant to be a very funny line, but there's a straight guy in the show and he refers to the soundtrack. And then there's this other character who's very, very funny, plays a priest actually. And he looks and he goes, it is not a soundtrack. It is an original cast recording.
Ooh, that's good. Oh, that is like, that sounds like something Lea Michele would have said on Glee.
Yes. Well, it brought the house down. I have never forgotten that line. And I always wait when anybody says cast recording. I'm like, when they say
original soundtrack, cast recording.
I said, that is for a movie. Anyway. So
I'm going to now say that forever. That is beautiful. Yeah.
You may work it in the show. All right. You're coming to Chicago. That's what you want to talk about. I know. I just have to get all that out of my system.
No worries.
So you're going to be at Venus Cabaret and you're here for just 3 nights, March 15th, 16th, and 17th to 8 o'clock shows on 15th. It's a Friday, Saturday. I'm still trying to work out a way to get there. I do the news on Friday and it's a really rough end. Yeah, unless you can do a private show for me.
I know.
But anyway.
I was hoping that maybe in the future they would do a live stream. 54 Below does a live stream. I don't know if the venue that's something they'd ever want to do, but I found that people really, I was like, who would buy a ticket for that? But we did it, and it was people bought tickets. They wanted to see
And during COVID, I did do that kind of stuff. And if something's like you're 54 Below, but somewhere else, and I'm not going to be there, I'd buy it. Why not? I want to.
Yeah, it looked good. It sounded good. So, but yeah, I'll be there doing my new cabaret show, and it's fun because I have not played Chicago in this way. So it's sort of a best of, as opposed to when I play Palm Springs, which I do a couple times a year. I always have to change it because some of the same people come. This is really going to be an amalgamation of like who I am today, and obviously talking about Queer Eye, Rent, all the things, but getting a little bit deeper about me as a person. I always say my show is like the rated R 90-minute Glee version of my life. The songs are familiar, but the story is new, and I love.
I just interviewed Dot Marie Jones, Coach Beast, so that brings Glee right into
your. Oh, I love Dot. She's fantastic.
Yeah, well, she just did Highway Patrol here at the Goodman, and I wish you were. Oh my God. If you get a Dana Delaney show, it's unbelievable. If you know much about it, or I can tell you some other time. But by the way, so you have been to Chicago before. I can't imagine you have not.
I did Oprah there. I think I did like I was there maybe during a Pride thing, but it wasn't a Pride event. And then some weird dive bar hired me. I sang two songs at midnight kind of thing. It was very bizarre. And then the third time I was there was my friend Wayne brought me out to see him play Burr in Hamilton.
Oh, Wayne Brady.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've only seen Hamilton 47 times.
It was so great. I love it. Love that.
So I may give him my best. So anyway, let's go back to your show. I keep dragging you in all these other directions. So it was Ginger Minj who puts this cabaret series together, right? That's who is bringing you in, so to speak.
Which I just love because we did this telethon called Drag Is Not a Crime last summer. And she sang I Am What I Am. And I found it so moving and so surprisingly moving because I'd never seen her perform in that way. And I remember making it a thing to stop her after the show and sort of fangirl, but also in no uncertain terms say, I want to work with you at some point. And she was like, we're going to make that happen. I was like, you have to come to LA, blah, blah. We're talking. And I just assumed she'd forgotten all about me. And so when I got the call for this, I was really moved because usually the drag queen's going to hire someone. It's usually other drag queens.
Right.
And so I don't often get the call from Drag Race girls to come play. And this is fun. And I'm really thankful that they consider me, especially because I've been dying to get to Chicago, but just had no idea what venue would be appropriate. And, you know, how do you even reach folks if you know, beyond your social media, like to pack a place, that's tricky. And so the other thing too is, you know, Queer Eye was wonderful. It did not educate the world on me as a performer in this way. So, you know, I've spent 2 decades since kind of, you know, touring that re-education tour, you know.
Well, everybody that comes here, Jeff Hiller, I just interviewed him. He was here for some stand-up. Of course, he films the HBO show here, Somebody Somewhere. But I think you will. It's been a while since you've been here. You're going to love it. If you need food suggestions or anything, I'm not the guy. Yeah. I'm going to send you for pizza. But but it's fabulous. But let me go back to the show. So what I didn't know was it sounds like it's a bit of an autobiography of J. Rodriguez.
Yeah, I basically kind of take people through. I realize that I always kind of stick with what I know. In New York, I did I kind of did like my journey through love, sex, and relationships. And this iteration is a little bit of that, but really kind of, I feel like this is my fourth date with the city of Chicago. So it's information that you feel comfortable sharing on a fourth date. You've laid the foundation. Yeah.
Does that mean we will get music from Rent? Are you going to sing from Xanadone?
I have no plans right now of singing from Xanadone because the only thing I could really do would be the Someday You Might Love Me. It's basically the 11 o'clock number, and it's a little depressing. However, I am singing a duet from Rent with a very special celebrity guest every night. That was
we can't know who that is.
I have not been sworn to secrecy, so I will tell you that as it was relayed to me last night, Ginger Minj will be performing.
I thought that might be what you said. So I'll tell you what, you talk to Ginger, tell her I said hi. But if she says, I don't want people to know, then we'll make sure we get this edited out.
But okay, yeah. But yeah, it's going to be exciting because I said, is there anyone in the city of Chicago that I could duet either this song or this song from Rent with? There's got to be some musical theater performers who would, you know, love to come play. I don't know the city well enough to put that out there. And they said, hold on, we'll ask around. And so they asked around, and then CJ, who is Ginger's partner, was like, so what do you think about Ginger doing it? And I was like, well, technically, that's kind of why I asked. I was hoping Ginger would want to, but I didn't feel comfortable or confident. You know, I thought that was a soft way of gauging her interest. But I couldn't imagine a better person to do it with this, you know, the I'll Cover You duet is... This is a special place in my heart. I think it's interesting because it was, you know, I was playing a character who was so comfortable in their own skin, and I was had no exposure to gayness or queerness coming from where I came from, you know, just suburbia, Long Island, that Rent really was my education about so many things that the world has out there and the cast. So those songs, like, it's like my college years, you know?
I think Ginger fell in love with Chicago. She was here doing La Cage aux Folles.
She said she absolutely loves it.
And I think the same might happen with you when you spend a little time performing. By the way, where you're going to be, the Venus Cabaret is part of the Mercury Theater, which is next door, where Jersey Boys is about to open there. It's the first regional theater company that's been given the rights to do that. And
oh, nice.
So you should try and hang around. And the Music Box Theater, which is just a little bit down the street, is one of that old-fashioned with the organ kind of music theaters there. So there's so much to do in this city. And I hope you spend a little time and have make Ginger show you around.
I'm hoping to do a little bit of sightseeing, you know, trying to do a little bit. I don't want to kill myself. I also have been told that it's likely going to be cold.
It's, you know what? It's summer today. So do not count on that. I mean, nobody knows what this could be like next week and when you're here. But I got to tell you, the weather here, we had four seasons in 24 hours just last week. Some people think it's because the world famous weatherman, Tom Skilling, you may not know him, but he retired after 45 years. It was like a huge deal. We had a show for him. I performed at the Music Box Theater, sold out in 10 minutes. So he was that big a deal. And he just retired and we had four, literally snow. Everything fell in 24 hours. It's like his last day. We decided that was Mother Nature basically getting him off.
That's right.
but great things to do. And so for folks who come to see you, they probably expect to hear a lot about Queer Eye. I would want to hear about if you said any questions, I'd be throwing Xanadone at you. But do you expect most people it's all about Queer Eye for you? Or do you think people have that sense that, you know, you've done Rent, you've done other things?
It's interesting. Like usually I can tell by looking at someone what they're going to reference. So if they're a little older, they're going to do Queer Eye. If they're younger, they might do like a deep cut of something like, you know, recent. And then you're like, okay, because I'm going back to Uncoupled, but don't have a huge role there, but we're about to shoot season 2.
Yeah, they are finally doing season 2, right? Tell Nick Rulo.
Yeah, we start shooting in May, I've been told, but I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I don't, you know, they don't give you a script until weeks before, but so you never know. I mean, I would say, yeah, like if you have to put one thing down, I generally say Queer Eye. Yeah.
Yeah, people can know that. I did tell Nick Rulo, who's one of your stars from that, if they were looking for sort of a middle-aged Jewish guy, I'm available. He said he passed that right along. Okay. How long will the show be? We get an intermission. How long do we get with you?
I think it's just a 90-minute situation. I think it's like, I'd imagine about 12 songs. That's kind of what I have shaped
So are you
it
still,
up.
Are you still putting it together?
I'm kind of doing, I have this thing where I have a set list. It's written down. I'm looking at it. And then what inevitably happens is I enter a room and I'm like, oh, you know what I should do? And then I have that moment where I feel compelled to add or take away. So they're requesting the set list and any tech requirements by the end of the week. So I'm going to like stay as locked to that as I can. But 9 times out of 10, I mean, we did that even in New York. We had to make edits because 54 Below is very firm on how long your shows need to be for there. Yeah. And they can't go over. And so we had to like trim things and cut choruses or, you know, whatever. So I think I like the set list I have now. It's, I think, the appropriate amount of like fun, cheeky, you know, belty. And then you have some parodies in there. And then you've got the songs that break your heart. I mean, a little bit of everything. It's nice.
You know, the thing is, you've done stage, you've done TV, and beyond TV. I mean, you were in The Rookie and Uncoupled, as you said. I love that show. And Grey's Anatomy and stuff. Is there a favorite thing? Like if somebody said, all right, Jay, pick your job because you're going to do this now for 5 years, what would it be?
I think sitcom. I think I had a sitcom with Reba and Lily Tomlin. And I think the idea of like having the same character that each week gets a new script and the live audience, it's the best of theater with the reach of television.
Pegged though? You know, sort of like when people see Sean, hey, that's Jack. I mean, does that bother you at all?
I think like now in my 40s, I'm okay. Cause I'm like, if you want to hire me for 10 years to be this thing, that's okay. But I feel like even my reel, like my acting, like all the different roles that I've played, I thought for a while I was going to just play the gay best friend. And then that's not the case. Like things like The Rookie and stuff. I'm like, you know, a psycho crazed killer. So it's like, you really don't. Yeah. I don't have like a type anymore. Like the roles I auditioned for are so varied. And the ones that I'm about to shoot another series, which I can't talk about, but I'm shooting it in April and they're writing a role for me. And what's interesting about that is I don't know what kind of material they're writing. I just know that it's an Emmy winning series. It's a streaming series and they asked.
It's currently on. It's a new season, whatever. And you're going to get added into it.
New season. It's been, I think this is their, I don't know, 6th or 7th season, something like that. Okay. But they basically were trying to, gauge my interest in participating. And I was like, but yeah, I mean, if anyone's going to write you something, great. But I don't know what I could be going in there to, you know, be a villain. I could be going in there to be someone's Casanova. I have no clue.
That I'll bet it's White Lotus and you're the new Jennifer Coolidge.
I wish. I would love to work with Mike White.
You can't tell us anything. Can you tell us anything about it? Like, is it a comedy?
It's more like a drama. It, I actually, it's a what they call digital drama, so it's streaming. But I presented at the 2000, well, the 2020 Emmys that were literally like being on Big Brother, where I entered a studio, didn't see one person, opened a door, had an earpiece of a director in another room, was height of COVID, and I was hosting the Emmys. And that was one of the categories, digital drama. So I knew of the show, and I knew like the actors and the creator and everything. And yeah, so I'm excited to do it. I'm just a little like, what are we doing?
I love it. Well, I followed your career. I love your career. We go back to Xanadont. You see, I bet that surprised you. And I hope everybody gets a chance to go. And by the way, Venus Cabaret is a small, intimate room, so you'll have plenty of people, but it's you will connect with that audience, so you're going to love it. I know you haven't seen the space yet.
I haven't, just photographs, and you know, I think getting in the space also too is helpful. I also know that, like, I have the tendency of like wanting to bring costumes and do changes, and I'm like, this is your first time in this theater. Let's just do a straightforward, simple, like each night I'm gonna have a different look. I'm not gonna wear the same outfit every night, but I sometimes find props to be cumbersome. And so I was like, I have one iconic prop actually that the venue is lending me from Mean Girls. I asked for a prop and they were like, actually, we have this. Would you like to use that instead?
I love it. Well, can't wait to see you here. March 15, 16, and 17. Tickets at mercurytheaterschicago.com. mercurytheaterschicago.com. Jay Rodriguez, 3 nights only. Don't miss it. I love you. I think you're fabulous. Thanks for spending some time
Thank
with
you
me.
So much. All right. We'll see you soon.
You got it.